Hello and welcome to the AAMFT podcast, your all-access pass to the latest news, developments, and thought leaders in the world of systemic therapy, where we strive to relate, educate, and innovate one episode at a time. I'm your host, Dr. Eli Karam, and we're brought to you by the American Association for Marriage and Family Therapy. In addition to featuring unique conversation and interviews with established experts, our show provides information and education on direct practice and emerging trends in the MFT profession. For more information, please visit us at aamft.org. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Step inside, take a seat, let's explore the world of therapy like never before. Dr. Eli's here, bringing voices so bright, innovating, relating, and shedding new light. It's AAMFT, where wisdom meets passion. Come listen and see, talking trends, deep insights, and stories so bold. For MFT minds, the future unfolds. Systemic, my friends, we relate, educate, and innovate again. Stay systemic, my friends. Stay systemic, my friends. Stay systemic, my friends. We relate, educate, and innovate again, one episode at a time. At a time.
Ketamine was approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration in 1970 for use as an anesthetic. Ketamine is a drug best known for its pain relief and psychedelic properties. It can decrease sensitivity to pain, and depending on the dosage, route of administration, it can create a hypnotic, even dreamlike, or fully disassociative trance state for people. Because of those effects, ketamine has had many alternative uses in the medical field over multiple decades. It's still used as part of general anesthesia to control pain during and after surgery. It's also developed something of a negative reputation due to increased instances of misuse and addiction on the street, sometimes known as the street drug Special K. Recently, though, this drug has gained a new life. What our audience will be interested in is a potentially powerful addendum to traditional psychotherapy. I'm talking about CAP. That stands for ketamine-assisted psychotherapy. That is a treatment method that involves using ketamine's trance-inducing properties to help individuals work through various mental and emotional challenges. While CAP is promising for mental health treatment, it has not received FDA approval for specific use. So using any medication other than in an approved FDA model, while still fully legal and is common in medicine, this is called off-label usage. Ketamine-assisted therapy is divided into 1 or 2 one-hour preparation sessions, then a medicine session, which is administered during a longer period of 2 to 2.5 hours. And then at least one follow-up, what we will call integration sessions. And that's used to process what happened in the treatment and to make sense of the experience and to take it into use in everyday life. Unconscious material can arise from the expanded awareness in these non-ordinary states of consciousness in the ketamine session. So depending on the dose, client could experience a sense of great relaxation or have thoughts or feelings or visuals that makes sense at the time or later during this integration period. And as always, you need a good therapist as a guide to hold space in that room and do the integration work. Lately, ketamine has been integrated into couples therapy. So if you're a client, you may use the ketamine in a couples therapy session and be with your partner during the experience. You may be giving a smaller dose, which we'll call a psycholytic dose, and be able to interact with your partner, or you may have a heroic dose that takes you on this trance-like inner journey, and that you can share with your partner and your therapist as the effects wear off. So I'm talking about this today was there's someone I wanted to talk to for a long time, and that is Dr. Tammy Nelson. She's a board-certified sexologist, an ASEX-certified sex therapist, a licensed professional counselor, and a certified Imago relationship therapist with over 35 years of experience working with couples and individuals focusing on what she'll call flexible monogamy relationships. You may have seen her at a TEDx talk, and she hosts a podcast that I enjoy listening to, The Trouble with Sex. I think you will enjoy this a lot, and we will be back after our interview with Tammy. Eli, back with you on the AAMFT podcast. This is a topic that we have gotten requested multiple times, and I've been dedicating a lot of the last year in my own clinical study of this during my academic sabbatical. Today, we're going to talk about ketamine-assisted therapy with couples, and I'm doing that with a couples therapy expert, Dr. Tammy Nelson. The first question is always your therapeutic origin story, so to speak. How did you get interested in couples therapy, and then your journey into integrating ketamine?
First, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And I'm just always so shocked and delighted that the field has opened up to have this conversation. When I was doing my training as a couples therapist, all of my graduate training and my postgraduate training and all of the certifications and everything I did around relationship therapy was a little compulsive. I think I was trying to prove to my mother that I was legit, even though she's dead, but I was still trying to prove to her that I have enough education. But I took so many relationship courses and licensures and stuff, and no one ever talked about sex. And that in and of itself fascinated me. I thought, we're talking about romantic and emotionally committed relationships, and there's almost this collusion in the psychotherapy field that we're not going to talk about sex with our clients, much less talk about it in trainings or in education. Even in medical schools, I train in medical schools sometimes, and they get about 15 minutes of how to talk to their clients about sex. And so that became my next sort of obsession, was to how to learn and to teach how to integrate sexuality into relationship therapy. And so I think the combination of those things, I think I've just always been an integrative therapist. I was an art therapist. I got a master's in art therapy as well. And I was really into therapy and dream analysis and metaphors and the multiple meanings and layers of things and how we could see and interpret life from a lot of different sort of multiverses. Like, not everything had to be interpreted through one dynamic or one, there was no normal. And that, I think, is the most intriguing part of what I've learned from psychedelic therapy as well. And so it just fits really well to have this conversation with you today. So I appreciate it.
I'm looking very forward to talking to you. And specifically, psychedelics have exploded over the last couple of years. I'm also integrative by nature. How did you get interested in learning about those? And again, you're in a place, California, where it's a front line for lots of new and innovative things. But when we think about the psychedelic assisted therapy movement, we think of places like Colorado, Oregon, California. So you're in the right neck of the woods. What got you interested in psychedelics and ketamine specifically?
I was a teenager, like many of us in the generation. I'm about 14, 15 years older than you. But I had probably the same experience of a lot of people, which was to experience and explore and try different psychedelics. And we grew up, the people that were back then, cleaning our sticks and seeds and pot on our record albums. And now that generation has become the scientists and the experts and the real sort of movers and shakers of this generation that are looking at not just medical marijuana, but all psychedelics, and as really the medicine that expands our knowledge of psychotherapy. I don't think there really has been a bigger move in the field, except for maybe our understanding of trauma And also, which I think is an interesting crossover of psychedelics, is our understanding of the brain. So now we can understand neurologically what psychotherapy is actually doing for people. We can actually look at your brain and say, this is how we're helping you. This is how we can help you with your trauma. This is actually proof that you can change your brain. Your brain is plastic. You can actually neurologically rearrange things. And we've never known that. There's no precedent for that. So I certainly knew as a teenager I was rearranging my brain, but I didn't know where to put anything. And it was terrifying and lonely. And I wasn't developed enough in my brain or secure enough in my attachments to really be able to process it. So I had a lot of intense and frightening experiences. And then as an adult, I went through 20 years of raising children. I meditated. I was vegetarian. I was sober. I didn't do any drugs. I didn't smoke pot. Like I really cleansed myself for 20 plus years. And then
cleansed your neurological palate. Yeah.
I think I did. I think honestly, I did. I think I needed to do it to be a parent and maybe cleanse my family history a little bit. And I went to therapy and I discovered the sort of pathways of healing on so many different levels. I explored what intuition meant and really went deep into meditation. And I really explored what education was going to mean for me. And I started writing books and really understanding how I needed to figure out what my mission was in the world here and how I was supposed to help people. And then I finished school. I went to graduate school. I did all my postgraduate stuff. And I was seeing a couple and they were in a crisis. They were in a turning point. It was actually a medical doctor. And they were focused on the difficulty in their sex life. There was some betrayal trauma, some infidelity. They were struggling trying to figure out if they should open their relationship. All of the things that I work with people on, just a range of monogamy on the continuum of anywhere from traditional monogamy to wide open. And just trying to help people communicate about it without, I don't really have a judgment about it one way or the other. I really do believe that people can communicate and create their own relationship agreement. So I was working on it with them and they weren't getting anywhere and they were just stuck. And I was stuck. And then they told me they had this experience with this shaman dude who gave them an experience with some sound and some psychedelics. And I think it was ayahuasca. I don't recall. I do recall the absolute transformative experience for their relationship that they came in and it was like they had been in therapy for 10 more years and suddenly everything we did had an incredible impact. Everything I said was genius. I was suddenly brilliant for them. And I realized that there was a healing that I could not reach, that they could not reach, that somehow impacted their mission as a couple. And I realized that what they found is that they figured out who they were supposed to be in the world together. And that was all of a sudden more important and more impactful than who they could be separately. And that changed, I think, everything for me.
Like many of us, the entry is we had a recreational experience with the psychedelics in our youth. And for some people, that is a good experience. For some people, it's a bad trip. And then a lot of times we hear about things from our clients, similar to you. I was working with this couple and they went to a retreat in Costa Rica and it was an ayahuasca ceremony. And just to orient our listeners today, we're going to be talking about ketamine. When we think of psychedelics, we think of plant medicine, ayahuasca, psilocybin, or mushrooms, and also synthetic MDMA, ecstasy. But I'd, like you, had this couple and they came back so much more connected. And the things that we were doing inside and outside of the room had so much more resonance there. And I guess I was doing what now we'll refer to today for our listeners in a minute, an integration session, really without knowing I was doing that. So it sounds like we've had similar experiences. Ketamine 101. For our listeners that know nothing about it, tell us about the origin of ketamine, off-label usage for psychotherapy. Then we need to talk about the difference between ketamine treatment, which anybody can go and get, but I think what our audience is going to be interested in, which is ketamine-assisted therapy.
My journey from that couple to being a ketamine-assisted therapist today, I had my own psychedelic experiences, which actually healed a lot of the experiences I had as a teenager. So it was almost like I finished off the unfinished business of my childhood and completed a lot of that work and realized that there was a whole nother level. There was a whole nother universe of healing out there. And that started my journey of pursuing what trainings could I get, no longer trying to prove to my mother, but really for me, like, what am I supposed to be doing in the world? And I was so curious. I took the MDMA training with MAPS, and MAPS was in its phase 3 trials and about to be approved by the FDA. MDMA is what we recreationally called ecstasy or E, and it was pushed back. And so they're now re-entering their phase 3 trials to try to be pushed through the FDA approval. But that training led me to ketamine training because ketamine is legal. And it's an anesthetic, and they use it for surgery with babies. It's an anesthesia. They really use it because of the efficacy and because you can really use it dose dependent for many different things. And because of, like you said, the off-label usage, it can be used for depression and trauma. And there are studies that show that it really does have some longitudinal effects on people's brain chemistry, and that because it's a very short acting experience, it's not like taking LSD where you're there for 6 or 8 hours, or even ayahuasca where you can be there for a couple days. The reality of psychotherapy and the cost effectiveness of these experiences, ketamine is actually pretty convenient because the ketamine experience really only lasts about an hour and a half, maybe an hour and 45 minutes. And then there's a few hours of where you're still under the influence, but, and we can talk about the specifics of that, but because it's such a short acting experience, but can be really deep, it's really effective for our use. So ketamine is something that you can use in therapy in two ways or many ways, but psycholytically, where you do a low dose of ketamine, where people can actually stay present and talk to each other or talk to the therapist, and psychedelically, where people have more internal personal experience where they go really deep and then come back out into that psycholytic experience where they can do some processing and, like you said, integration. I do want to say and just reinforce, and I'll probably say this a few times, that ketamine is not a magic pill. It's not helpful without integration. I really 100% believe that people will have the effects. You can have the antidepressant effects. You can have the neurological benefits of memory reconsolidation and all the wonderful things it does to you neurologically. But without the psychotherapy for integration, it's not the wonder drug or the easy out that people may be assuming. And I just want to be clear about that because it may be something that we could run into some trouble with. And I just want to put that cautionary word out there.
Oh, I can't agree with you more. And that is a good place to distinguish between just ketamine treatments, which you could go to any medical provider, psychiatrist, where basically, as you said, usually in a setting like that, it's administered through IV. It could also be done through lozenge, but you're basically getting your infusion and that's it. You're not getting what we will call in a second preparation, and you're certainly not getting integrations. That is, I think, what you and I are clearly saying. There's no panacea. It is no magic pill, or in this case, infusion. But ketamine-assisted therapy is going to work with a trained mental health provider in addition to the provider of the medicine to have a more holistic integrated experience. So let's talk about those three components: the preparation, the medicine sessions, and then finally, and what many people would consider the most important, if it's the change in the insight is going to last into their real life everyday experience, and that would be the integration. So you can break those down for us one by one.
Sure. And I'll do it through my lens of how I usually practice, because I'm a sex and couples therapist, so I primarily am seeing now either couples in intensives or I'm doing retreats.
And that is going to be of great importance, not just to me, but our listeners. And that is the work that really is powerful and not as much as being written or documented. This is historically in psychedelics. I've gone through this whole training and sabbatical, and there has been probably about 95% individuals and about 5% groups or couples. So it's vastly underreported. And again, we're talking about ketamine, but MDMA, its origin is with couples in the 60s and 70s and using it. So I think it's like a full circle coming back around. But please use your frame of reference, because that will be the frame of reference for many of our listeners.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And you're absolutely right. And for me, the applications are really fascinating for couples, because it, first of all, in a retreat format, we still use the same integration format. A couple who, let's say, wants to come to me for an intensive, which would just be the two of them, or they want to come to a retreat, which would be in some destination place. It could be three couples or it could be 30 couples, depending. So they would meet with me for a preparation session. It could be by Zoom or it could be in person. If I have co-leaders, because it's a large retreat, they might meet with both of us at the same time. They would also have an appointment or a preparation session or a screening session with a medical provider. I'm not an MD, so I don't give the ketamine. If we do an injection or we do it with a lozenge, the medical provider, either an MD or an APRN, would actually prescribe the medicine. So I would work with the medical provider to talk about dosing and what I think the couple needs as far as their actual work that they're going to do in the retreat. But they would have a separate screening session with the medical provider. Our preparation is more about what are you looking for? What intentions do you want to set? We might even have two sessions in preparation. So one would be to ask questions. This is what the retreat's going to look like. This is the work you're going to do by yourself. This is the work you'll do in a group. If we do it just the three of us, this is what it's going to look like in my office. You'll have to take an Uber home. This is how you'll feel. This is what might come up. And then also to really be clear on what is the work that you want to do on your relationship? What is the intention that you want to set for yourself? What would you like to see happen for your partner even? What is the vision that you have? What are any concerns or questions? A lot of people know about Matthew Perry dying in the hot tub being on a very super high dose of ketamine. And we can talk about some of those concerns as well. We talk about all the things that may have been in the media and any fears or contraindications that people have, any comorbidity that might be happening. And then they always have access to me before the session or the retreat for any questions or concerns that come up. And there are people that perhaps it is contraindicated for. If you're in a real intense conflict or problem with your partner, if you're on the edge of aggression or fighting a lot, it may or may not be the best place for you. And then you have the experience. And then within a week or two, we have integration. And just like you said, I really appreciate the way you said it, the integration, the follow-up. How was it? What happened? What's the meaning that you make? Because it's more important to talk about the narrative of what happened and how you're integrating the meaning of that into your life. And I can give you some examples of that. But we do that in the retreat in and of itself or in the intensive, and then we do it at least once or twice afterwards.
We'll break that down a little more. So first start with the preparation and the screen. So you are checking all of those things you said. You're asking them also probably about their history with the psychedelics, correct? Because a lot of times people will have an experience like you were telling us about in their youth with psychedelics, but therapeutic use of a psychedelic is much different than a recreational use. And obviously there'd be some rule outs. A medical provider, as you said, is the one not only dispensing the medicine, but checking things like blood pressure and all your other vitals. There is that piece in psychedelic community to talk about holding space for other people. When you are doing this, a question we'll get a lot, when you're doing with the couple, are they both taking the medicine at the same time, or is one taking it, then holding space for the other, and then switching?
I always have them take it together. And occasionally I'll have what we call a sitter in the room with me who can sit and hold the space. A lot of it is based on what we call set and setting. So it's the mindset of where people are at, what they're ready for, and the setting of the actual room, the space. I've done retreats in Buddhist retreat locations or in giant yurts or in beautiful places in the desert, like really trying to give people the sense that this is really a retreat from your normal life. And that helps to set up that relaxed feeling. And that's good for any kind of couples retreat, whether you're doing it with medicine or not. It's like a little vacation from your regular life. And so it sets up the intention of we are going to do the deep dive and we're going to spend the money and the time, take away from our kids and our life and our jobs, and we're going to come out of this better for it. And that in and of itself is important. And I think one of the biggest takeaways for me that I have learned as a therapist, probably one of the most valuable things, regardless of all the education and all the books I've read, is that this has taught me that couples and individuals have their own inner wisdom and they know what they need to get to the place they want to get. Like they have their own inner intelligence, much more so than I ever dreamed was possible. Like I always thought, especially as a younger therapist, I've been doing this now for over 30 years, 35 years as a therapist, I always thought I had to have the answers and the interventions and the tools, and I had to know where people should get to or what people should do, or I had to give them the right home assignments, or if they weren't compliant with what I did, I was making a mistake somehow. And a lot of my control issues now are like, I've let so much stuff go because I can absolutely see the power of allowing people's inner wisdom to run the sessions.
We call what you're speaking about inner healing intelligence. And you are so spot on. I remember the biggest learning curve for me, like you, in my training therapist around the country and in my own work, is probably about 95% couples. And you can't be a good couples therapist unless you have directive parts of you, and unless you can break up patterns and sequences working with couples that have a sexual trauma or sexually repressed. How do you think ketamine could open that pathway up?
Yeah. I really feel like what I talked about in the beginning about trying to figure out what my mission is in the world. One of my experiences on my own ketamine journey, I asked, what's my next step in my mission in the world? And the answer was, that's a stupid question. And the idea was you can step into anything you want. What is it that you want? And you have the choice to serve in any way that you feel like you can. And what I was left with was, first of all, stop striving to get to the next place. You're going to exhaust yourself. And secondly, what is it in this moment that you feel like you need to do with people? And I really feel like trauma around sexuality is so prevalent in our culture and has held back not just women, but men. And that's the turning point in our conversation. And for me, ketamine therapy is getting to those places that are in the shadow that have never been healed, and being able to shine, not only shine a light on them, but have a language to deal with those memories and those experiences that are not just in our history, but in our bodies. So ketamine is so powerful in that it can change the way that we have a narrative around sexual trauma, because it looks at it from so many different levels. You can look at it ancestrally, generationally, historically, somatically, psychologically. It really is really powerful. You can get at the myths that the culture has put on you, get at the shame. And it really is about finding a place to move forward with pleasure.
For people that are listening to this, they're like, wow, this is way different than what I'm used to in my couples therapy. You take the medicine and you usually, in an individual administration, you have your nice eye shades, you're laying down, you have a lot of times a curated playlist, and you're going inward wherever that takes you. Sometimes you may have an intention, as you said, what you want to focus on before. Other times you just, you go where the medicine is, as we say, you don't work ahead of the medicine. But with a couple, especially on what you're calling a lower dose, I imagine you could dialogue and talk while that's going on. So let's talk about what it actually looks like when you're on a larger heroic dose or a smaller therapeutic dose.
I have my own theories about it. There certainly is a lot of science to say what's happening in the brain and the sort of cascading effects of the neurons. And basically, the memory reconsolidation that happens during a ketamine experience, it's almost like you're taking out the narratives that you've stored of all the things that have ever happened to you, and you're taking them out and shaking them up and then putting back in. And so now you're storing up all your experience and your narratives in a whole different place. And it's like a different plug and play. And so you're coming out of it with this new view of life, a new understanding, which is why it's so incredibly powerful with trauma, because you can really perceive the traumatic experience without the same emotional memory. And so you're really waking up different parts of your brain. And part of the reason that happens is because it shuts off a certain part of your brain that is about time and place, and wakes up parts of your brain that have to do with tactile experience. So like color and taste, and you start to connect music to color. So colors become music. That's really the psychedelic experience. But the important part of that is that you don't have this observing ego that's constantly trying to make meaning of it or judge it. And so most of us have a perpetual observing ego. Even right now, as I'm talking, I'm thinking, am I saying the right thing in the right order? And is it making sense? And should I say something else? And don't forget to say this. And don't forget to mention that. Like, that observing ego gets in our way and changes the narrative. When you don't have it, you begin to experience something really profound. We talk about trying to be in the moment and using mindfulness. This is truly being in the moment. So if you're talking about using music to guide the experience, which is incredibly powerful. Somebody just told me yesterday, it's like the music is the river, and you are just riding the river, and you're like in the boat, and the boat is the experience. And we were trying to ride that metaphor to death, but it is an interesting way of talking about what the therapist does have control over. If you create a playlist of music, I'll share with you, in my trainings, I did a lot of my own ketamine journeys so that we could experience what that was like. And there was one playlist that someone had made. And in the middle of the journey, there was a song. It sounded like the Valkyries were going insane. It sounded like a war song. And I just remember thinking, oh, that's a really bad place for the boat to go in the river. I did not want to be on this river anymore. And thinking how powerful the experience can be for the person creating the music. And there's a whole industry right now that's popping up around creating playlists for people that are musicians and people that are really good at this and are really hip to this kind of technology. It is a really powerful thing to design someone's inner healing experience, and that we do allow people the time and the setting to go inward by using the eye mask, using the music, having that internal experience. You asked about if you're on a low enough dose and you can talk, the therapist should keep note on everything the person says. So I'll sit there and write down any words that come up, any sentences, any questions, without guiding or explaining or saying, it's okay, don't be scared, or don't cry, or without anything, really allowing the experience. You're just recording. So people may cry, they may yell, they might be afraid, they might be happy, all of that is just fine. And it's their personal experience. I think that's another thing that therapists have to be trained in order to sit with and really let their own journey happen.
And because of this, before you can hold space for your clients, part of the training is, as you said, going through your own journeys, understanding that experience. And I too, like you, have really jumped into this heavily over the last couple of years. So I remember using an IFS framework. I remember doing my own work, and a lot of my protectors or managing parts on the ketamine, they just, as you said, being in the moment, they naturally take a step back and let you access things that even I thought I knew myself pretty well into my 40s, but I was surprised at the experience. So I think we're talking about two potential uses. You're talking about growth, whether it be growth as a couple, or I feel like an untapped market. And what we will see moving forward is therapist self-development and growth doing this, as you alluded to, and what I really see as a huge avenue for non-clinical populations. But then you're also talking about the integration of this work with treatment-resistant depression and trauma and the really healing potential of that. But people are going to ask, again, all right, this seems too good to be true, and there's a reason MDMA and the MAPS training did not get passed through the FDA. There's a reason psilocybin and other of these really native indigenous medicines are not used above board. So if we have to do a fair and honest assessment, what do you think of the major risk involved? And we'll keep it focused on ketamine.
I think we have to talk about what we began with, which is the use of ketamine and the clinics popping up all over, started by venture capitalists, which are run like dialysis clinics, where you just go in and you plug yourself in and they turn on a TV and they leave you in a room by yourself and there's no sitter and there's no integration and then they just send you home. And that scares me. I think that has the potential for real problems. Now, I have had patients that have gone through that and then come for therapy and talked about the terrifying fact that they had the news on while they were on ketamine. And secondly, that they did feel effects, the positive effects of their intractable depression getting better. So there is something to be said for the fact that if you're on a good course of treatment, it actually does work. However, I worry about the news getting embedded into your memory.
I think part of our job as clinicians, even if we do not have in the scope of our competence, we do not have the training to do what you and I are talking about here today. It's like knowing the difference, like I've been saying, between these ketamine for-profit clinics that are popping up versus real ketamine-assisted therapy that has these preparation integration components. Because without proper preparation, I don't know if you've seen this, Tammy, I had one client described that went this route, and they went into what I think is called a K-hole, where no one prepped them. They had a traumatic experience and a memory of a trauma, but because there was no preparation work before, they had not been doing therapy on it, it was not healing. It was scary and very disorienting. So I think if you do not have the proper setup and then the proper follow-up, I wouldn't advise or want any of my clients to just have the medicine without the support and the talk that comes before or after.
Yes. And that being said, it's a horrifying story, but that being said, it brings up the issue of access. This can be really expensive. And especially if you're talking about prep, the journey, and then the integration, it's really becomes a privileged medicine experience for something that, particularly in this world of psychedelics, like you said, has been around and accessible for thousands of years. And part of the reason I really believe that it's getting held up for FDA approval is that pharmacologically, people want to make money off it. So the big pharma wants to process to make sure that they can get all the patents and whatever.
The people that could need this the most, people that have treatment-resistant depression or severe trauma, they don't have the access to it. In my understanding, especially ketamine, is a very inexpensive drug. That what we're talking about, which is the time. So for your time or my time, there's hours of prep. There is the 2-hour medicine session, and then there's the integration. So it becomes very expensive. And for therapists that want to do this, one model is, okay, you have the really affluent people that can afford it, and you feed that back into the model for the people that can't. But most therapists that I know that are doing this work, they are doing it for the powerful transformative properties and their own journey, because it is not, at least right now, a model that is very cost effective. So I'm glad you brought that up, because in this debate and educating an audience like this that would listen to our podcast, like, that has to be part of the negatives and what they haven't quite figured out yet. But I do think it's very important to talk about that. And people, as they do with anything, will profit significantly off of this, which is why it's being held up too.
You're absolutely right. And that's why I have a little bit of sympathy for the mail order ketamine programs that are out there, like Mind Bloom, and places where you can get prescriptions on the internet and then get your ketamine mailed to you with an eye patch and a couple of months worth of prescriptions of lozenges at the same time. The risk of that is clear. You know, that people can sell them, they can give them away, they can take too much. You're responsible for your own dosing. There's built-in risks there. The upside of that is that it makes it more accessible. It's less expensive. You only need one appointment to get a prescription. They send it to you. They treat you more like an adult, not like a child. You can go on the street and buy ketamine. If you can buy it in a bar, this way it is more regulated. We know it doesn't have fentanyl or something else in it. There's a lot of sides to this argument. I think the important piece for therapists as we're learning about this is to not go on the side of panic, to know that Matthew Perry took doses that were 400 times what we would give someone. And he did it like three times that day, and he got in a hot tub. And this is a dissociative drug where you cannot feel your body. So you shouldn't be in water. You shouldn't be around a bathtub or the ocean or a hot tub. Clearly, there's some safety risks involved, and people should know about that. And you mentioned the K-hole. That happens because you cannot feel your body. You're out of connection with your body. And actually, just a quick little story about where the idea of a K-hole comes from. It actually is from Vietnam.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt. That was the origin of the drug, administering it to combat injuries in the field.
And then when they didn't have access to enough helicopters to get people out of there in time, they would give people ketamine and actually put them in a hole in the ground to protect them until they could rescue them. And so people couldn't, they didn't feel their injuries, and they were safe until they could be lifted out. And so that's where the whole term K-hole comes from. So it's really about being safe, but it can be terrifying, as you can imagine. I want to mention that part of access, I think, that will help all of us is to get trained and understand how to do this in a group setting. That couples in a group are doing a group where people have access to a therapist or two therapists who are trained, one medical provider, and several assistants who may not have to have all the training. They could just be sitters. Makes it much more affordable and accessible for people who might want the experience, particularly therapists who might want to, like you said, be the sort of frontline learners. And I think that is a worthy endeavor if you're looking to break through. And I want to mention Susan McBride and Mark Cornfield, who are in Canada, who have done studies with couples in groups using ketamine. They've done weekly groups now for a while. And so they did a longitudinal study to talk about the effects on those couples, on the individuals in the couples, in the dyads. And they talk very clearly about how they use their Imago therapist. I'm an Imago therapist as well, Imago relationship therapy. And they talk about the techniques that they use. And they also are very clear about the dosing. Mark is a medical doctor. So if you're interested in research on groups with couples, they just released a study it's a peer-reviewed paper. You can have access to it. I can get it for you if you don't have it.
Oh, please, and I'll share it with our listeners, because I think part of the challenge, and we won't endorse any specific place. We mentioned MAPS for MDMA, and currently you got trained in that. I got trained in that. Currently, as they're reorganizing, you can't get trained in MAPS anywhere anymore. The challenge is, where do you go in this very emerging science? And we've said so many important things today. I guess because now you've had these couples experience. So group modality is more cost effective. You can affect more. I'm wondering what the differences are between a couple you're working with in your office versus a group of couples you're facilitating with over a weekend retreat.
It's surprising, and I'm surprised myself, but almost think it's more powerful to do it in a retreat with other couples. I know we're not supposed to be supporting any training program, but I did my training through Polaris. And, you know, that training is in a group, like the power of the group. I train with Jane Gumpel, too, and she talks about how the group is the medicine, and it absolutely is. So if you think about the power of a group, and if you know how to do group therapy, which I know a lot of your listeners do,
yep.
you know how to integrate that work so that the group does the work for you. So you're not doing individual work with each person, and you're not doing individual couples work with each couple. The group actually does amplifies the work. So it's wonderful to do
the whole greater than the sum of the parts, as we say in family systems. It really does work that way. So I used to think you had to know everybody in the group, but having these other experiences like you've had, I don't think that's necessarily true. I think there needs to be a modicum of safety, of course, and knowledge about the experience. But I think it is very powerful when this is being done in a group setting. People will ask ideal numbers, Tammy, of a group. Let's just say it's you and one assistant. How many people you think you can credibly hold space for in a setting like that?
I think it depends, like you said, on the assistant. And if there's a medical, I always have a medical provider. So ideally, I like to have me, a co-therapist, one medical person, and then two other assistants. Like my husband does it with me. He's a musician. And the last retreat we had, my co-facilitator, her husband's a musician too. So we had live music during it. And so our assistants were playing music. And then when we had the pre-recorded music during the peak time of the journey, they were also assisting and just keeping an eye on people and getting people blankets if they got cold and stuff. And that I thought was just a beautiful experience. And overall, I really have the feeling that this work and the reason it's so magnetic for therapists, we're also drawn to it, is because it's bringing people back to the feeling of connection with everyone. It's bringing people back not only to the feeling of connection to the universe or to whatever their spirituality is, but to each other. So the fact that we're doing it in a group brings back this experience of being in the village. I had this experience of almost like the psychedelics in and of themselves are like the hearth. And we all need to come back around the hearth again, gathering to re-experience what this is, especially at this time in the world where loneliness is at an all-time high and isolation and mental health crisis is affecting everyone around the planet, that this is a time where it brings people on a journey of connection that we so desperately need right now as humans. And so there's something about the group experience that I think we are being drawn to do and to create.
It's hard to argue with any of that. Now, the challenge is, again, preaching to the choir, your excitement and my excitement. I don't know if the field of couple therapy, systemic therapy, I hope they are ready for this, but we're having a conversation that up until recently, therapists talking about this would be, again, in the underground, below board. Where do you think, let's say we have this conversation 5-10 years from now, where do you hope we'll be in the psychedelic assisted therapy movement, especially incorporating partners? Because I can't underscore enough that the power of doing this with partner present is huge. Because if the partner is not there and you have to go home and explain your journey to your partner, and it is much more powerful for the partner to be there engaging with you. But where do you hope we'll be with this movement 5-10 years down the road?
I think there's going to be more movement to legalize psychedelics. It's going to end up being like medical marijuana, and then which eventually led to recreational legalization. And I think that we're going to see it more in the corporate world and more in business. And when that happens and people start to see the benefits in their employees, and it's already happening in business retreats and stuff, that then there's big money and grants available. And then we'll get into a bit of a crisis around FDA and who's going to be in charge of what prescriptions. And that'll be a blip. But I think there will be to more of the Burning Man idea that pleasure, play, joy, dance is such a integral part of being human, and that it's not a reward for hard work. In our culture, the idea of pleasure is that you, it's only a privilege for those who work hard enough for it. And if you work hard enough, then on the weekend you can have some pleasure, but then you better get back to work on Monday and a little more broke and a little more hungover, but get back to reality. And I think as we shift to a more feminine idea of culture that pleasure is where the power is, we're going to see more and more exploration of joy. And right now we suck at joy. We're great at misery and trauma, and we kind of bond over that, but we're almost embarrassed to be joyful with each other and happy and share that moment. So we only do it in really short bursts. And it is for privileged people who can afford it, who are not struggling, who are not suffering. And I think there's going to be a shift. I think it's going to take time. And certainly we are in a strange political landscape.
No, that is true. The larger system which we're embedded in has a lot of influence over the development of this. But I can't thank you enough. We didn't talk about what you're really known for and your work with the sex therapy and obviously your own podcast, which is great. But here, please, you could talk about DrTammyNelson.com or anything that you think would be interesting to a lot of systemic couple therapists in the audience. But please plug anything you want.
Thank you. My podcast, which is for free, is called The Trouble with Sex. And if you have any interest in being on the podcast or would like to see certain things or certain guests, I'm happy to take your emails. You can email me at tammy@drtammynelson.com. My website is drtammynelson.com. I have 6 books. You can find them there or on Amazon or wherever books are sold. And then my institute is the Integrative Sex Therapy Institute. And if you're interested in being a sex and couples therapist, we have courses in relationship therapy. We have courses in sex therapy or the integration of both. And I'm actually looking for people who, like your listeners, have some experience in these fields because I desperately need supervisors. So if you're interested and you have a CV with some background, I can transfer you into these certification programs and fast track you because I'm so busy and I need your help. So I really am happy to talk to anybody. And actually, I'll give you a free ebook if you want to tell me you heard me on this podcast. And just email me at tammy@drtammynelson.com.
Eli, back with you, bringing to a close another informative installment of the AAMFT podcast. Did you know that AAMFT is active on all your favorite social media channels? Be sure to follow us, the AAMFT, on Instagram, X, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And you want to stay up to date with everything going on in the world of AAMFT, you can always find the back installments of the podcast anywhere you find your favorite podcast. I am partial to Apple Podcast and Spotify, but it's on Google Play, Stitcher. So please, if you're new to us, check out back installments where we tackle the latest trends and events impacting the world of systemic therapy, like today. And I have a number of pioneer interviews, which is some of my favorite interviews to conduct over the years. You can drop me a line at elikaram.com, where you see everything going on in my world, including 2 books that are out. One for our young professionals, Marriage and Family Therapy, National Exam, Your Guide for Success. That's from Springer. And that will prepare you for the national exam, including 360 practice questions, a full-length mock exam, proven strategies and tips for test-taking, and it's organized to match the domains of the licensure exam. And then, if you're interested in these common factors that we always talk about on the show, including what makes a motivated client, how you build, nurture, and repair a therapeutic alliance, how you maximize your own therapist factors. You want to check out my book, Bringing Common Factors to Life in Couple and Family Therapy, from Rutledge. As always, thank you so much for listening. And until next time, my friends, stay safe, stay systemic.
Stay systemic, my friend. But
stuff to be like a fan of the latest inside the level. Countless family therapy. Pop in the feeling. Safe to stomach, my friend. To be like education. Give it again. Safe to stomach, my friend. Hear the latest debate with our guests and topics we illuminate. From theory to practice, there's so much to know. Join us on this journey, let the knowledge flow. Stay system.